Hello everyone, welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Rajat here. I'm a director at Matrix. And today I have with me Vikram, managing director at Matrix. Both of us spend a majority of our time investing in and working with financial services companies. And today, as we are all dealing with the coronavirus situation, which is clearly a black swan event, I think all Vikram and I have spent a majority of the last 2 weeks talking to a lot of our financial services founders and trying to ascertain what the impact could be and how we should think about it. These are tough times. We don't have all the answers, but we thought that as we did this exercise, it might be helpful for the rest of the ecosystem to share with them on how, at least how we are thinking about it and how companies could potentially think about it in the future as well. So Vikram, given that you work with so many of these NBFC fintechs as well, how should founders deal with this? This is clearly a one of its kind situation.
So you know, by now, with the Prime Minister putting us on lockdown last night, it's clear that this is an unprecedented situation, and we're in uncharted waters for everyone. Anybody who says that they know what is coming or have been through this before is wrong. So, we've been speaking with a lot of our founders in our portfolio, outside of our portfolio, and we're trying to put together all of these learnings. So take it as learnings. Some of them might work in their particular situation, and so on. With that particular caveat, let me actually share, why I think sort of fintech and financial services is different from all other sectors that we're investing in, and why, for me, overreacting is the only reaction acceptable for all fintechs. So what makes financial services and fintech unique? You have four stakeholders. You have your borrowers, you have lenders, you have regulators and political constituency. And then you have investors. Now, all four are going through a once-in-their-lifetime event. And usually, financial services is affected by a risk of fear of losing money. All of these four constituents have a fear of losing money, and therefore they react in a certain way. This is a fear of losing money plus a fear of losing their lives and the health of their loved ones. So it's a deep-rooted fear psyche that's taking over. Now, all of these four constituents are interrelated. So, for example, if some borrowers refuse to pay some lenders, those lenders will not lend to other fintechs, which means an investor who's affected in one part of the portfolio will not invest in another part of their portfolio. A regulator might say, hey, I want to say one constituent was badly affected, therefore they don't have to repay, which might trigger off all of these events. And then you end up in a vicious cycle, and that vicious cycle is immediately a falling knife where things can just happen overnight. And that's the fear that you're seeing playing out in public markets, and that is going to hit private markets. That's the reason that fintech and financial services is completely different, which is everything goes wrong together and immediately. Therefore, overreacting is the only reaction, and you have to plan to say that I'm going to plan for this scenario where everything is going to go wrong at the same time. And when everything goes wrong at the same time, if you have not carefully planned that scenario on how you're going to react, because you also have multiple parts of your business, you have an asset side, you have a liability side, you have an investor, you have collections, you have risk, you have so many different facets of your business. And unless you've done scenario planning so that you are prepared to act at that point in time, I think it's very hard to turn it on with a switch. So plan for the worst, overreact as a team when you're planning for the worst, and then execute daily and weekly. And as you hit a certain triggers, then, if you get to that worst case plan, then you know how to act.
So Vikram, how should, companies think about these scenarios, right? Because, there are all sorts of these lingos going around, V-shaped plans, U-shaped plans, L-shaped or W-shaped, right? With COVID coming back, what's your suggestion, given what we've seen in China or in other places?
Yeah, so
or the microfinance crisis back in the day, right? Because I remember we were affected by then back in 2010 as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have seen a bunch of them. So we were affected by the global financial crisis, and we were affected by the microfinance crisis. There's also gold loan regulatory crisis.
Yeah.
There was a liquidity crisis, and then there was a demon crisis followed by another liquidity crisis. So we have, ecosystem, we have a bunch of those, and obviously as investors who've invested through this, we've seen a bunch of these. In this particular case, let me just simplify some scenario planning. There are some people who predict a V-shaped scenario, which is our best case right now. And by the way, Harvard is saying they, a V-shaped scenario could be possible because all pandemics have gone through a V-shape. That's the most optimistic version. Honestly, for me, it looks hard to imagine that V-shape, especially from an India perspective.
Especially financial services.
Yeah, especially financial. Yeah. So I would be planning for a U and a deep U. A deep U is essentially that there's a big falling knife. It takes a deep and broad, to be honest. It will take a long period of time to come back, and it will come back slowly. So that's one scenario. And the second is much more a scenario which is essentially an L, where you never come back to that same level, at least in the 12 to 18 month runway that we are all planning with. That, of course, assumes that the global pandemic will take long. It will take long to subside. It will make a resurgence in the US and make a resurgence in Italy. Then it might make a resurgence in India. And all of these are interlinked. That essentially accounts for a L-shaped scenario. Now, again, let's just take a few constituents. The investors, equity investors, will react first because they're taking the highest risk. So my sense is that if you're assuming an equity infusion coming, or you're in the middle of that equity infusion, I would just be very careful. If you have, close it if you can. But if you're assuming that you're going to raise money over the next 6 months, that's an assumption that I would just take off the table. Assume no equity infusion.
Yeah.
Then it's a question of lenders and borrowers. The lenders, while being fearful, will likely react to triggers because they have gone through all these cycles. They will not want to just shock the market because they know one particular shock in the market will essentially shock everyone else. But they will be forced to react to triggers, and react to triggers in the public markets, react to triggers which happen in their own portfolio when they are lending to not you but somebody else. And also to regulators, which they have to follow their word to a T. So,
and I guess that will mean them increasing or encashing FLDGs in a marketplace situation, or stopping new disbursals, and the whole hog, right? And likely the unsecured guys will be hit the first. And then over time, I guess even the secured guys may not be spared.
The second constituency is the borrowers. Now, with the borrowers, you'll have to be careful to figure out your pockets of risk. And I'm going to give you three dimensions. And we have a wide portfolio across all of these. So secured versus unsecured, SME versus consumer, and whether you have end-use control or if you don't have end-use control. And I'm taking a broad cut across these three axes. And obviously, there is the most at least in our view, where we are seeing the best portfolio hold up is secured with full end use control and with mostly SME, less consumer, and though I might be wrong, but obviously we don't have consumer housing assets, but consumer housing would be one of those, right? Where it is secured, you have end use control, and you have consumer. Similar segments in SME is probably the best, and the most likely to get affected is probably unsecured consumer low ticket size with no end use control. So that's the spectrum of risk. Figure out where you land on that spectrum of risk and then take actions on borrowers. And I have some thoughts on this. Once you have all of this, I would say figure out your scenario plans in the U-shaped scenario as well as the L-shaped scenario. Involve the team. And the output of this scenario plan should be 7 to 10 action items, where these are big projects, and start organizing your company by those projects. And figure out these triggers. As soon as those triggers happen, you should be project one executed, project two executed, project three executed, and should be executed by teams, not necessarily by the functional leaders, but by cross-functional teams, because you'll have to take action across different functions. And in a time of crisis, you want to organize yourself by, as Mish calls them, tiger teams, which are just going after specific crisis action items. Rajat, maybe you want to give examples of how companies have reacted. What are the kinds of initiatives that people have come up with? Just so that people understand what some of the companies
have. No, so I can give examples of companies across different product types and different customer segments that Vikram, you alluded to, across SME, consumer, unsecured or secured products. Companies that are trying to think about this across three different dimensions. It's disbursal, AUM and collections, and OPEX or their cost structure. So depending on, you know, how much cash people have on their balance sheets and how, if they are from a runway perspective or from a leverage coverage perspective, people are taking anywhere from 70 to even 100% cut in disbursals. And budgeting for, again, depending on how secure your product line is, anywhere from 15 to 30% of borrowers in the coming first quarter, at least, to not be able to repay the loans. And in that context, how do you think about collections? How do you think about soft collections versus hard collections? And how do you think about being humane and empathetic to the borrowers? So that you can get at least some money out as collections, but not let the loan go NPA or loan go bad. And last on OPEX, again, going back to how much capital people really have, the cuts on fixed cost are going to vary anywhere from 10, 20% to even 50, 60%. Because as Vikram was saying, all of this is going to come at the same time from lenders. Liquidity tightening is going to happen. Borrowers may not pay on time and so on, right? So in this perfect storm conditions, you need to take drastic actions if required, and don't be shy from taking them.
The last thing, I mean, the one thing that I will add on the cost side is that obviously you have variable costs, which you can act on very quickly. There are fixed costs which can be made into variable costs, and think very carefully on how you can make some fixed costs and fixed payments especially into variable costs. And then there are fixed costs which, you know, involves decisions like team and so on. Now some of these decisions are really brutal, and you know, we've been having some of these conversations with folks, and I don't want to underestimate the human impact of some of these actions. Do it carefully, especially in a time like this, where you know people, you know, are worried for their health and health insurance and so on. So I would say involve the team. I think when you involve the team in some of these decisions, you will see that people come up with very creative ways of committing to the company yet hitting a target cost.
Yeah. No, and we've heard examples where, especially on insurance, people are offering to cover people with the insurance when they were not otherwise covered, as well as on salaries, for example, trying to you know, compensate with ESOP as much as possible if we can.
Yep.
So, Vikram, you know, any other learnings from the portfolio, you know, especially people who've been doing it for a while and have seen cycles?
Yeah, so I was talking to a few of, you know, experienced financial services guys and what they have seen help ride out these storms, and I've jotted down a few. The first is have an acute understanding of your risk pockets. And very granular understanding of their risk pocket. So sometimes for some companies it will be geography, some companies it will be branches, some companies it will be products if you're a multi-product company, sometimes it will just be segments of consumers and SMEs. And almost all of them shut down all high-risk products last week or the week before. As soon as this started, everybody just said, no high-risk products and all my high-risk segments, I'm just going to stop. Second, organize their company and collections by those high-risk segments. And you know, I was talking to someone yesterday. They had their best collections week last week because they did this. And they essentially said that I will collect everybody who's high-risk. And they actually had a better collections on the high-risk portfolio than they've ever had, just because they had this granular understanding of this. So second one, you know, given that I'm on collections, this is going to be especially tough because you can't visit your borrowers. In most other situations, at least you could go visit your borrowers and find out what the situation is. So some of these practices, everybody is going to invent anew. So there are, if I had one statement to make on your collections and your borrowers, it would be keep the relationship alive. Just keep your relationship with your borrower alive such that even if you're not able to fully collect during this time, you're able to re-trigger and renew that relationship when this is over and be able to get back from them. What are the ways in which you can keep a relationship alive? One, by collecting much smaller installments than they're willing to pay. Therefore, acting in a more human way. Second is trying to figure out how a relationship is continuing to be active while becoming a NPA, while not being an installment, but very high degree of frequent and transparent communication happening with the borrower. The last one, which I heard, is really tweak your incentives across your organization, A, towards collection. But one of the companies had a very interesting take, which is to cut the incentive threshold, which means that if, let's say, you have to achieve 100 in collections, in order to get that incentive, take that 100 down to 75 or 80, such that people know that they're not going to collections, but they can actually hit that 75 or 80. And sometimes it could be 50 or 60. Now, depending on your company, your segment, you'll make that assessment. But that actually promotes a higher degree of collections within the organization.
Also, I guess people are repurposing some salespeople, right? And, you know, they are not dispersing.
Yeah. The entire organization is just focused on risk pockets, collections. The third, from a strategic level, is to stop thinking of your business, if you're in lending, as a balance sheet business. Even if you're in the payments business or if you're in the non-lending business, stop thinking of your business as a balance sheet business and think of your business as a cash flow business. And sometimes the lending companies take a minute to adjust to thinking of your entire business as a monthly cash flow business, which is money in, money out, and match inflows and outflows. If you're able to just match inflow and outflow and ride out this phase, you'll be fine at the end of it. And so it's not a P&L situation. It's not an NPA situation. It's actually matching inflows and outflows. So inflows are your debt equity and your what your borrowers are paying you, and outflows are disbursements and payments that you have to make to your lenders and so on. If you match them 100-100, you will actually be okay at the end of it. I think I covered collections, disbursals. I think Rajat has already touched upon. The one tip I'll give you is sustain enough disbursements in order to be able to collect. Everything has to be collections driven. And in certain segments, if you stop disbursing and if you are not active, then the borrower will think that the company is going down or this is not a lender worth paying. And therefore, you will need to manage different pockets, different segments in such a way that you sustain disbursement enough to collect. The last one I would say is communicate and over-communicate in this phase. It has to be clear, unambiguous, and also has to be frequent, where you can't be shut down and you can't be looking inward. You have to be just communicating outward to your organization first, to your lenders second, to your borrowers and lenders, and third, to your investors. One tip is to ban all hearsay and fear-mongering within your org and within your ecosystem. Have centralized communication that is frequent, and you're communicating clearly the risks and addressing the risks clearly in an honest and open tone. If there is fear-mongering that is happening around your company, and once it takes on a vicious cycle, it's hard to actually quieten that cycle. And last, just make all the don'ts very clear. in a crisis, it's very hard to figure out what to do. But at least if you say, these are all the actions that you're going to stop, and it gives a very clear communication, especially to your organization, that this is stuff that you want to do.
Yeah. No, I guess to conclude, I think, it's not all gloomy. Best companies in financial services have actually emerged out of these troubling times. I remember back in the day, Bajaj Bajaj Finance's stock price was down to low single digits, I think, after the 2008 crisis. But they really started taking off from there on because they survived that crisis. I guess the best of the microfinance guys, whether it's Ujjivan, Bandhan, all of these guys, or Equitas, all of these guys came out strongly on the other side of the microfinance crisis. And in our portfolio, maybe Five Star came out very well out of the demon crisis. So there are great companies that can be built, and hopefully we'll get some out of this as well.
So we are long fintech and financial services, and we will continue to do that. The ecosystem is very resilient and comes out of each crisis stronger. So this is just one of those things that we will have to navigate carefully, and we will come out stronger at the end of it. I'll just echo that what Rajat said. We think the best companies will be able to navigate this crisis, come out stronger. And I will tell you that the survivors will really thrive, because given the lack of financial services penetration, fintech is really going to drive the penetration. And as soon as this thing is over, we will actually get that supply back in the market. Good luck. Stay safe. Again, act carefully as we hit different triggers. Feel free to shoot us an email. I would love for people to be adding to this thread. We are all learning from each other.
Yep. Thank you, everyone, and stay safe.
Thank you for tuning in. And you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.